In this episode, we're going to be recapping the Christmas Day games, talking about some of the troubles with the Lakers and the Suns, talking about Ja Morant's return to the Memphis Grizzlies, and so much more. So let's just jump right into it.
Time out!
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And this is the last podcast, last Time Out Talk of 2023. It's been a great year, but there's a lot to talk about. So let's start by talking about the Christmas Day games, which, as we're recording this, happened yesterday. And there's a ton to talk about here. So let's start with the beginning of the day. At noon EST, we had the Knicks taking on the Bucks in Madison Square Garden. And the Knicks ended up walking away with a win here, 129 to 122. So, Hunter, were you able to catch this game? And if not, even if not, what were some of your takeaways from this pretty, decisive win for the Knicks?
Yeah, I didn't catch the whole game, but I definitely caught some of it. And from what I could tell, the difference between this Knicks team being a playoff team and even like a contender is how well RJ Barrett plays. And this game showed that RJ Barrett has the potential. He's a great player. He can be consistent. And when he does bring out that sort of star-like quality in him, this is a very hard team to beat, especially Jalen Brunson on his game. Julius Randle acting as a bruiser. Even with Mitchell Robinson going down, Isaiah Hartenstein has really stepped up and taken a big role as the starting center on this team. And they look really solid. I really like what I see out of this Knicks team. They're a very aggressive, very physical basketball team. And that didn't fare very well for the Bucks because, even though some of their starters are very physical players, they have a very weak backcourt and Dame and Malik Beasley, and they were sort of able to bully the second unit a ton. So this Knicks team has a really strong identity, and this is we also have to talk about this Bucks team as a team that's still finding their way. But the Knicks look great. When do you see them?
Yeah, I'm more concerned with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think a lot of the concerns we had to start the season about their perimeter defense are really coming to light here. And we saw that this game, right? Jalen Brunson got whatever he wanted this game. He was absolutely tearing apart this Bucks defense, and there was no one really on the Bucks that could stop him. They started the game with Malik Beasley trying to guard him. That didn't work. So, they tried Chris Middleton, they tried Dame a little bit, they tried Andre Jackson Jr. None of those worked, and what's it called, Jalen Brunson really just tore this defense apart, and he wasn't even doing it by the three. I think he made like one three, but he was getting to his mid-range, he was getting to his floater, he was getting to the cup. He really just did whatever he wanted. And so if the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be legitimate contenders, they're going to have to shore up this perimeter defense, because if they run into a team like even the Indiana Pacers or the Philadelphia 76ers with Tyrese Maxey, they're going to give them these guards are going to give them serious problems that the Bucks just don't have an answer for. As you're saying
I
though,
have an answer.
what's your answer?
Bring back Avery Bradley. Just get him on this Bucks team, Just he look, man, he's only 32, maybe 33. He can provide some serious help to a lacking defense.
Maybe, but I think, a guy that I think would be perfect on this team is a guy like DeJounte Murray. I mean, this is a guy that would solve a lot of the Bucks' problems. Obviously, it's going to be hard getting that guy with, the limited assets you do have, but the perimeter defense, if anything, this game should have been the exclamation point on this problem with the Bucks as of right now. Great team, and I mean, obviously, I think the Dame Giannis pairing is still a recipe for success, and they're a legit contender, but this is their main weakness, so they do
But
have to pick.
DeJounte Murray is a nice. Oh, sorry, I was just going to say DeJounte Murray is a nice idea. But you have to look at a team that gave up everything to get Dame. This is a team that does not have assets, and they're stuck with what they have. Like, I really do not think they can make moves. We've seen the value of second round picks is high, but they are even working with scraps on top of that. And the NBA is trending towards that. You've seen a team like the Denver Nuggets win the NBA championship off of obviously Jokic, but what else did they have? Good roster balance. And it's shown time and time again that having top-heavy teams does not win you titles anymore. And I think that would be a very poor decision for the Bucks to make.
That's true. That's very true. So I mean, like maybe, come the trade deadline, their moves are trading a couple pieces, getting a guy, maybe not him exactly, but like Jay Crowder, guys like that, who can sort of just provide some 3 and D.
Did they
And
not already have Jay Crowder?
that's why I'm smiling. I'm like, maybe they already do have Jay
They
Crowder. But I'm thinking
do.
guys more of his
Guys like
team.
Jay Crowder. Like
Yeah,
getting
like
PJ Tucker back. Yeah.
but honestly, PJ Tucker's not doing anything with the Clippers. You could probably get him for free. And I think, his tenacity might be a welcome addition. But just the Knicks briefly, I think, Brunson and Barrett really carried this team through. And I love what I'm seeing out of New York. This is a team that fights. This is a team that, battles for every single rebound, every single loose ball. And I really like the addition of Dante DiVincenzo. I think that he's been just a nice addition off the bench, providing some shooting, providing some hustle. A little bit of defense here and there. So I was impressed, but I think this game was more so like a signal to the Bucks that changes need to be made. But moving on from there, let's talk about the Nuggets besting the Warriors 120 to 114 in Ball Arena in Denver. What obviously the Warriors still don't have Draymond Green, but honestly, they've looked better without him. They went on a bit of a win streak after his suspension, but they weren't able to get it over the finish line in this one. So, what'd you see from this game here?
Yeah, I think Jonathan Kuminga has been really good for this team in the absence of Draymond Green. And I think, he's really taking Wiggins' spot. Like, he's just been really good for them. He's had very good energy. He's been hitting the three ball, good defense, good athleticism and size. The stars have been good. Klay Thompson has sort of returned to the mean. Like, I hadn't talked about this before, but I wasn't too worried about Klay Thompson. He goes through his streaks. And especially as he declines in, his career, his streaks are probably going to be even more severe than they have been previously in his career. He'll probably have much longer streaks of poor play and probably similar streaks of great play. But, he's in one of those hot streaks right now, and it's looking good for them. Steph Curry, honestly, has been struggling a little bit as of late. Just not really hitting his shots that he'd usually hit, but not too worried about that. I think the key story here with the Warriors, especially, is the emergence of Brandon Podziemski. Like, this dude is absolutely just making immediate impact on this team. And this is something that I will take credit for this. He's has the second highest plus minus among all rookies, just behind Chet Holmgren, which keep in mind is very impressive considering the minutes discrepancy, the role discrepancy, this is a guy who's technically like a sophomore, even though he didn't play minutes on the OKC Thunder, who are the second best team in the West, versus Brandon Podziemski, who's played much less time on this Warriors team, who has not been winning nearly as much as the Thunder have. So honestly, I think this is probably the most impressive statistic among all the rookies, leading into plus 106 in his playtime. What do you see out of Brandon Podziemski and the rest of this Warriors squad?
I mean, Brandon Podziemski is just a dog, man. Like, you were so on the money when, I was looking back through some of our old podcast clips and just like trying to find that segment where you were talking about how you were, talking to Brandon Podziemski's parents and how you love what you saw out of him. And on the podcast, you're like, this is a guy that's going to make an immediate impact, and, is really going to help the Warriors right away. And you couldn't be more right. So, honestly, you deserve a big pat on the back. It was
Oops.
the bold take, but it ended up panning out. Brandon Podziemski,
NBA scout one
seriously, I mean, he just gives you so
day.
much on both sides of the floor. Like, he's a good shooter. I mean, he's even a good defender, I feel like. He had, I think, five steals in that Christmas Day game, which was very impressive to see. So he's just delivering on both ends of the floor. He's a very tough player. He's a guy who just like seems to be able to keep up with the NBA pace and the NBA physicality.
Yeah, I got some
I'm
stories
just
about
like
this guy that
I'm
only I
blown
would know,
away. It was a very, I mean, like, he looks him and I would say Trace Jackson, they look better, honestly, at certain points than like Kuminga and Moody, which is crazy to think that these two like high first round picks are better than the Warriors lottery picks from a couple years ago.
Yeah, I know this is totally a random side story, but I think it actually has real application here. I was talking with Brendan Petrovsky's dad, and I was asking him, I was like, so, how long has Brendan been playing basketball? This has been a passion of his. And actually, he has been only playing basketball for about 4 years. This is a
Wow.
guy who played baseball throughout his entire high school career. He played basketball on the side as well. And he was a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher. And it was too easy for him. He was going to go pro in MLB, but he didn't want to take that route. So he started playing basketball and just became very good very quickly and is learning a lot as he goes. This is a guy who has barely scratched the surface, and he's such a well-rounded player. He gets on the boards. He's such an underrated rebounder, especially for his size. He's really good at rebounding. He's pretty good. He's got good vision with the he's got solid passing, good handles, and he gets the steals, gets out in transition. He's exactly what the Warriors needed. And I'm just rooting for this guy because of the personal connection, and I think he's very likable. So I can get off of the Brendan Podjemski and Warriors talk, but let's talk about the Nuggets here because they're the team that won this game. Steve Kerr had a quote at the end of the game basically saying this is sort of an unwatchable game. There was a little bit of a controversy in the fact that Nikola Jokic took 18 free throws and had something like 22, 23 points. He was like 2 of 15 from the field.
Yeah, this is not a good
And
game for Nikola
Steve
Jokic.
basically said, Steve Kerr basically said, I feel bad for the fans. This is just sort of unwatchable basketball. We should have, they deserve better. It was essentially his quote. Do you
Yeah,
agree with Steve Kerr, or do you think these fouls were warranted? And
it was not a pretty game. I'll say that much. I think that, Jokic is an elite player. He'll know how to draw fouls, but some of them are just like kind of manipulating the system. It's less so on Nikola Jokic or even like Joel Embiid, but more so how the game is officiated. And I think that, the league tries year after year to make these efforts to prevent, players from foul baiting or doing these awkward motions. But we just see year after year, like the refs just kind of forget about these rules 2, 3 months into the season. And seems we've arrived at that point because Jokic is just getting these tic-tac fouls that honestly sometimes should just be no calls. And it just leads to a less enjoyable watching experience. The second half was pretty tough to watch. It's just a lot of free throws, a lot of fouls that, you think shouldn't be called, and a lot of people playing for the whistle. And I mean, Jamal Murray, give him some credit. He went on a nice run in the fourth quarter there, really sealed this win. And one of Jokic's two field goals was a dunk. So that was sort of the exclamation point on this game. But other than that, not really one, not one to write home about, and just kind of an ugly game overall. I think Hunter may be lagging out. So with that, we can just keep going on with the Christmas Day slate and talk about the Celtics besting the Lakers 126 to 115. This was a tough game to watch as a Laker fan. The Lakers have been struggling ever since the in-season tournament. They're 2-6. They went on a 5-game losing streak, I believe, on that road trip.
Apologies, I'm back if you can hear me.
No worries. Just was actually, if you want to talk about some of the Lakers' troubles, I just was talking about how the Celtics bested the Lakers 126-115 and how the Lakers have been struggling as of late.
Yeah, 2-6 since the in-season tournament. Gabe Vincent recently gone out with surgery, 6 to 8 weeks. He's out. Very similar to this sort of Kendrick Nunn situation where the Lakers acquired their MLE guy, who did not play for the entirety of the first season. This is Gabe Vincent's a guy who's played in 2 games for the Lakers. And who knows if he'll be back after the 6 to 8 weeks, considering the pacing so far. Another Miami guy, obviously. But that's been an issue, but that's more of a minor thing. I think ultimately, Laker fans have been turning on Darvin Ham. They have not been liking the coaching. There's been rumors of DeJounte Murray for interest from Rob Pelinka there. Are you worried about this Laker team at all in the since the in-season tournament?
I mean, what did the in-season tournament show us is that when these pieces are put together properly and they get going, this is a team that can make it very far and can beat any of the top teams in the league. But I mean, so far, there's just been a lot of factors that I think have caused this team to struggle. Obviously, like going on that long road trip, playing games in close proximity. This team got tired, and that was very evident in multiple of those losses on the road against the Celtics here. I mean, this we, in my opinion, we just didn't really have an answer for Kristaps Porzingis, and I think our defensive adjustments were made too late. He kind of got whatever he wanted, and you know there was some pretty ugly possessions there where you had Rui Hachimura trying to guard Kristaps Porzingis, and Porzingis just shot over him. I mean, it's what happens when you try to have a guy 6'8" guarding a 7'1". 7-1 guard or 7-1 center like that. Overall, I think that Laker fans and fans across the league are quick to point their fingers at the coach, first and foremost. I mean, we saw this with Frank Vogel. This, like, the same tune is being sung once again, about the Lakers' struggles. The first guy that has to go is the coach, and that if the coach is gone, everything will be fixed. No, I mean, there's some issues with this roster construction. Obviously, like there's issues with, you know, health, but that's not really an excuse here. But sometimes you just gotta give a team time to gel, time to figure it out. I mean, I just looked as the at the in-season tournament as an example of like when these things are working, they can work really well. And so this team has the potential, all the capabilities are there. Just a matter of putting all these pieces together and not like immediately freaking out and blowing everything up the second you run into any sort of struggles. I know there's a lot of trade talk and around, like, say, D'Angelo Russell, but I think that, you know, you have to give these things time. And so I'm not too worried. But do you feel any differently?
No, I want to talk about the fact that people, especially today, just in general, this isn't just like a basketball thing, but it's very applicable. People want instant gratification, right? You want everything to be immediate. You want everything to click. You want everything to gel, especially in the age of such easy internet access. Everything is basically immediately given to you. And I think that bleeds into people's expectations of their real life. And that goes for basketball and other sports as well, where you don't want like the struggle of the season. You just want to see your team immediately click, immediately gel, immediately win. And the realistic part of this is that that almost never happens. And you know, teams need time to gel. Chemistry really matters. But just like coaching changes really matter. When you have a guy like Darvin Ham, who is a very good player, if he connects well with the players, that's important. When you talk about his schematics or his rotations, you could have some question marks there. But I think overall, he's been pretty good. And like you're saying, when this team is clicking, you see what the success can be. This is a team that just recently beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. This isn't a team I'm that concerned about. I think, like you said, this has been a really rough stretch, a lot of road games. And I mean, when you talk about the Celtics game, this was the Lakers' first game back from being on the road for pretty much the entire month of December. And you know what they say about the first home game back from the road trip? It's the hardest game to come back and win. That's just what the players say. I don't know why it is, but that is what they say. So I want to give this Lakers team another 10 games, maybe 2, 3 weeks, and then I want to reassess where they are. Because if they keep losing, we can have talks. But this is a team I'm not very concerned about right now because they just had a very hard stretch.
I agree. And I think that, you know, like the Lakers have a lot of pieces and a lot of guys that, you know, there's a lot to still figure out. I mean, we didn't think Cam Reddish would be in the rotation, let alone a starter at the beginning of the season. And then here we are now. Obviously, Gabe Vincent was expected to have a much bigger role. So we're still figuring out like how the sort of pieces are going to readjust there and who's going to step up to take the shine. We're seeing, in my opinion, how some pieces like Jackson Hayes are not as promising as maybe we would have liked. And if we moved on from Jackson Hayes, I would not complain that much. I don't think he's that good. And I don't think he fits that well with this team. And you
It's
know what?
possible we can give Christian Wood some more room.
Yeah, and I mean Christian Wood definitely, in my opinion, deserves more run. And I think we saw, like, at the beginning of the season, Austin Reaves had a rough start, and now he's sort of figuring it out. And we're seeing Hachimura sort of also get to that level again. So I'm with you. Give it some more time. And I think it's a good point to mention the instant gratification. But one team that has not had to deal with those struggles is the Boston Celtics, who obviously beat the Lakers, because they've been pretty dominant this season. The fitting of Jrue Holiday and Porzingis has been as close to seamless as possible. They're ranked number one in pretty much every single offensive metric. I think a lot they're competing with the Pacers in a lot of different metrics, but basically they have an elite offense as well as a top five defense. I think for the remaining schedule, they have the top three easiest schedule in the league. And then finally, Derek White has been on an absolute tear this year, putting up some career high numbers, 16.5 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, with about a steal and a block a game on some really, really efficient shooting, 50, 42, and 87 splits. So first thing I wanted to address with the Celtics is that there's been some buzz around Derek White as a potential all-star. So, I mean, what do you think of this buzz? I mean, this is something JJ Redick tweeted out, and just, people are talking about it. First, what do you think about the Derek White all-star, discussions? And then second, what do you think about the Celtics, and what did you see from them on Christmas Day?
Yeah, let's start with this Derek White All-Star thing. I want to settle this right now. Derek White is not at an All-Star level. He's at an all-defensive level. I think we can have the all-defensive talks about Derek White. He's been incredibly good on defense. Like you said, everything is steal on the block. And, it's not just about the numbers. He's been very efficient, and he's a main reason why this team is ranked in the top five defense. He's taking on the team's best defender pretty much every single night. Along with Jrue Holiday. And, he's just been a really good asset to this team. But talking about him as an all-star, no. The East is a very strong conference this year, especially when you're looking at guards. I'm looking at Tyrese Maxey. I'm looking at Damian Lillard. I'm looking at, there's probably a list of like five or six guards I'm going to name before I talk about Derek White. Tyrese Haliburton's another guy. Sorry, I just can't think. Trae Young has been absolutely incredible. He's now has the longest streak, I believe, since Oscar Robertson, or now he's tied the streak for most 30-10 games in a row, which is absolutely ridiculous for a guard to be doing. I just want to pull up a list of teams real quick so I can go through and name all the people who are ahead of him on this guards list. Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson.
I mean, obviously Jaylen Brown, right? I mean, Jaylen Brown's got to have a higher
Jalen Brown has to
chance
be ahead of
than,
him, of course. I mean, who else is on this list? I mean, that might be the list right there, but that's enough guys for me to say that Derek White's not an all-star.
I'm
Do
with
you feel
you.
any differently?
No, I'm with you there. And I think people get a little too excited. I think, there's a difference between being a star player and being a star in your role. I think that Derek White is an elite role player. He is one of the best role players we have in the league, but he's a role player. He's not a star, and he shouldn't be in the All-Star game. I mean, the Celtics arguably have two All-Stars, but they're not a three All-Star team. And if they did, that third All-Star bid would go to a guy like Porzingis or a guy like Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, exactly. I
Not,
think you can very much argue Kristaps is the third star on this team.
yeah, not Derek White. I mean, so let's calm down here with those talks. But I kind of get it because the Celtics have been so good, and Derek White has been such an integral piece to that.
I don't get it though, because when you're talking about Derek White, you can talk about like a most improved. Like, I don't think he deserves that. But when you're talking about like what he's done, he's really taken a step up, and people are recognizing that step up. But to call him an all-star when you have obviously Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are pretty much secured all-stars, but then you have two guys on the team aside from those two who are definitely better players than them. Like that to me is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's just sort of in the same vein as like that 2015 Hawks team, which had, Al Horford, Paul Millsap, Kyle Korver, Jeff Teague all be all-stars because the team was so good, it artificially kind of boosted the value of some of these players, even if a
But
guy
that
like,
was also, sorry, I was going to say that's also at the point when the East was at its weakest. Like 2015 was a very weak year for the Eastern Conference.
That's true. Yeah, we didn't have guys like Damian Lillard and Donovan Mitchell and, in the East. So, yeah, definitely no Derrick White All-Star bid.
Sorry, you had a second question. I'm trying to remember what it
Yeah, I was just
was.
gonna ask, what have you seen from the Celtics thus far this season? And what did that kind of pan out on during Christmas Day?
Right. What's honestly been the most surprising to me for this team is their efficiency and their three-point shooting. I did not think this team was such a good three-point shooting team. And they've just been knocking the three ball. And it's more than just the threes. This team has just so many ways they can hurt you offensively. It's incredible. The Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are using their physicality in ways that they haven't in years prior. Jason Tatum is really leveraging his physicality. Like against the Lakers, there were multiple possessions where it was just ISO with Rui, and he was going to the post. And Rui Hachimura isn't a small guy. You're talking a 6'8", 260 of pure muscle. And Jason Tatum bullied him. That was something I didn't really expect. And that's not something I've seen from him, and I really like that because it gives some versatility to this offense. Kristaps just incredible, really great on the putback dunks. Just he hasn't been great from the three ball himself, but he's been doing everything else. And this team, I just don't know where you stop them offensively because at any given time they have five guys on the floor who can all shoot the ball, can play physically, will crash the boards, just play with intensity, and that's not always something you can teach.
And then off the bench, look, you have guys like obviously Derek White's coming off the bench, Al Horford, Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard. There's just a whole lot of firepower coming off the bench and a mix of defense and offense, veterans and young guys that you can rely on. This is one of the deepest teams in the league, incredibly well coached, and it's just a unit that's firing on all cylinders. And I think we saw that on Christmas Day. I'm worried if I'm a team in the East, because if you're like Philadelphia or you're Cleveland or you're Milwaukee, you're thinking, how am I going to stop this team? Right now I think that the Celtics should be favored to come out the East, and as of right now I don't see another team that can maybe could really stop them because they don't have a weakness,
No,
as you said.
they're elite. They really are elite because on defense, it's the same issue. You're obviously dealing with Jrue Holiday. We know who he is as a player. But Jaylen Brown and Jaylen Brown not as much, but Jason Tatum has stepped up his game defensively. We don't talk about how much enough that he's become a two-way player. Then you also have to deal with Kristaps, right? You got that help defense. It's just absolutely smothering. Kristaps had some really great blocks against LeBron, Anthony Davis. He's just out there doing his thing. And he's enabled to do that because you have Jrue Holiday giving such good pressure in the backcourt, and Jason Tatum has become an elite two-way wing.
Yeah, and I think Jason Tatum has really elevated other parts of his game. I think he's become a much better playmaker at this point in his career, to where he didn't even have a great offensive game in terms of shooting last night, but he was still able to make a positive impact in terms of distributing the ball and finding his teammates. And so, yeah, I'm concerned if I'm any other team in the East. If I'm a team like maybe the Miami Heat or the Philadelphia 76ers, perfect segue. Because that was the next game in the slate, with the Heat beating the Sixers. And I guess the big story with this one was that neither Embiid nor Jimmy Butler was playing, so this one was kind of a skip for me. I didn't really tune into it that much, just caught some highlights here and there. But I guess the big story with this one, the other big story, is that Tyrese Maxey kind of went missing, and then Jaime Jaquez Jr. Wow, what a game from him.
Yeah, I did watch this game because I just want to see what would happen to the 76ers without Joel Embiid. And like you said, Tyrese Maxey kind of disappeared. He's been okay without Joel Embiid in the games that they haven't played, but it's very clear that they have a very special two-way connection. Not concerned about that at all, because obviously, take out a guy like Joel Embiid from a team, you're going to struggle. That's just clear. There shouldn't be really too many talks about that. But on the Heat side of things, I think we knew Jaime Jaquez was this kind of player. Like, not that he was like a 30 and 10 kind of guy. I think we all knew he was ready to come into the NBA as a player and have an impact on the team. And he's definitely exceeded expectations. And especially being on this Miami Heat team, he couldn't have found a better home. This is really the right place for a guy like him, a guy with such intensity, grit, good development, good culture. Like, these are all things that really help young players develop. And it accelerates guys, especially guys who are already coming into prepared. So, you know, just good on him for being, I think, the only rookie outside of Shaq, and I think it was like Shaq and Wilt to have a 30-10 game, or something like that. Or
That
maybe it was
can't be
Shaq,
right.
Wilt, and Dwight.
That can't be right.
Shaq, Wilt, and Dwight. There was some metric. I'm totally, maybe it was like on Christmas. Maybe it's something lame like that.
Yeah. He's
But,
the first rookie, Miami rookie, to have 30-10 on Christmas when Christmas was on a Monday and the moon was in, three quarters rotation. No,
Yeah, but I saw some metric. I think there was actually something, there was an impressive.
but
I
wait, let
don't
me just
remember.
interrupt you real quick. Do you regret as a Laker fan the Lakers taking Hood Schifino ahead of Brandon Podemski, then Jaime Jaquez Jr., then Cam Whitmore?
No,
No.
I'll say this. I'll say this. The Lakers are a very good scouting team. And I think this is something we've talked about this before. Like in the same light, we talk about Scoot Henderson. You have to talk about Jalen Hood-Schifino. He's a true point guard. His job is to facilitate offense. If the Lakers' intention was to find a player who was a good offensive facilitator, which I believe it was, they found that guy. But to do that job takes a lot of getting used to and a lot of time. And I just think that the other teams chose to take players that were more ready to come into the league and have immediate impact. The Lakers weren't looking to have a guy who could come in and have immediate impact. Even if they did, I don't think they'd be the same on this Lakers team. This is a very deep Lakers team that would not be playing behind Hawkins Jr. real minutes. It would not be playing a Brandon Podziemski real minutes. Like, I just think that those guys panned out where they're at because those guys need them now. The Lakers took a guy, hey, 2, 3 years down the line, we can sign this guy to a longer term deal. And when LeBron's gone, maybe we have a legit starting point guard.
Fair
I think the
point.
Lakers just have different priorities.
Good point. Good point. So, I mean, one thing I want to say though about Jaime Jaquez, you kind of touched on it. We knew he'd be good, but I don't think anyone expected him to be this good. I mean, he plays so wise beyond his years. When I've watched him earlier in the season, he's just a guy that like will kill you on the small things. You know, he's just so like savvy as a player. He's got all these head fakes and up fakes, and you know, his footwork is so masterful. He's not even doing things off his athleticism, or his like elite shooting. It's just kind of like really smart play. Like he'll knock down the three ball here and there, knock down a mid-range fadeaway, you know, kill you in the post with these elite moves, but just can kind of do it all. He's just a gritty player, fits in Miami perfectly, as you said. Couldn't have found a better home. And I'm just like him and Jimmy, like kind of growing over time, and Bam. I just think that. That's kind of a perfect matchup there.
Yeah, and I would also like to just talk about real quick. We can move on after this, but the Heat, just as a team, people thought they were going to struggle this year, and I think I kind of hit the nail on the head with my placement of the Heat. I believe I had them in like the 4 seed, and they're at the 5 seed right now. So I'm very happy with that.
One last thing, one last thing. If you are the Portland Trailblazers, do you regret not making that deal for Dame? To get Tyler Hero, Jaime Jaquez, and I think there was one other guy involved there, and instead settling for the Bucks package, which you know turned out to give you Robert Williams, which gave
DeAndre Ayton.
DeAndre Ayton and I guess Malcolm Brogdon at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could definitely make that argument that the package they were going to receive was a lot better. Look, I mean, they didn't want to have Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero. They're worried about that defense. They want to take the risk on DeAndre Ayton, but I don't think. It's pretty clear that DeAndre Ayton isn't really trying to change his ways. He's kind of just like that guy who is soft. And hopefully he can change that. But I think it's kind of late at this point. Maybe they're just trying to change that. But I really don't think we can make any real judgments until Scoot comes into his own, because I know he will. It's just a matter of time. And I think we need to see what that looks like when he's the guy really leading the charge on this team.
Honestly, agree with you there. Also, I'm still bought in on Scoot, so I'm glad we're in agreement.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we can move on to the last game of the day.
Yeah.
Are you in the same place as me? Yeah,
Yeah, I
let's
just
talk
want
about this Mavs-Suns game. Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, I was just gonna talk about the Mavs Suns. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about this Mavs-Suns game where the Mavs won 128 to 114 pretty handedly. This is a game where We kind of saw Kevin Durant get very visibly frustrated and just a masterclass from Luka Doncic, where he's now the fastest player to get to 10,000 points in NBA history, beating out LeBron. He had 50 points, 14 assists, 6 boards, 4 steals, 3 blocks on really good efficiency. So just what do you think of this game? What do you say to Luka? And do you think he has a chance to catch LeBron on the all-time scoring?
If I were to sum up this game, I would have to point you to the YouTube highlights page thumbnail for this game because it had Luka Doncic's face against Grayson Allen's face. Because for some reason, Grayson Allen was really the only guy on the Phoenix Suns who decided to show up today, dropping 31 points. Kevin Durant and Booker played pretty poorly, I would say. They did not have great games. And I think, the second best player in the Suns was Chimezie Metu. So that just kind of shows how this game went for the Phoenix Suns. As for the Dallas Mavericks, Luka Doncic was spectacular. I think, 50, 14, and 6 is pretty, it's honestly par for the course with Luka. We expect these insane video game numbers from him. And in my opinion, he's number two, if not number one, in the MVP race right now. Him and Embiid are like neck and neck at this point. But I think what I'm most impressed by is the defense. 4 steals and 3 blocks from Luka Doncic is really impressive. And I think that is a testament to how much he stepped up his effort on that side of the ball. If you watch the Mavs throughout the year, Luka's no longer a guy that's just like moving a lackadaisical and like not really giving much effort on the defensive side of the ball. He's competing, he's fighting. No, he's not the best defender, but he'll get you a couple steals here and there, maybe a block. And I think we saw that all come to fruition on Christmas Day. I also do think it's hilarious how Luka will turn into like Game 7 Michael Jordan anytime he has to face the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker. He really owns that franchise, and it's a fun rivalry, but very one-sided. But yeah, I mean, I've just been really impressed by Luka this year. Fastest player to 10,000 points. Very impressive. If I were to predict where he would rank all time at the end of his career, it's very early to say. But one thing I will say is he does need to get those playoff wins and maybe a deep playoff run here and there. I mean, because yes, it was good to get to the conference finals in 2022 against the Warriors, but we need that finals berth that changes things, right? Like Luka and Jokic were in very similar conversations, but then Jokic went ahead and got that ring, and now we look at him in a whole new light. Obviously, getting the multiple MVPs helps as well. So I think Luka needs some hardware for sure, but I think it'll come. I could see him being, top 15, like in the best case. I could see that happening. He wins multiple rings here and there. Multiple MVPs, maybe gets a scoring title, maybe a few, an assist title. I could definitely see that. I mean, the amount of like accolades he's already gotten in this early in his career, it's just a matter of the team success now. So I think in the best case, top 15. In the worst case, maybe like a top 30. I could see him having a similar career to maybe, I don't know. It's hard. It's really, Luka's career is really hard to draw
He's like
comparison.
an Oscar Robertson kind of career.
Oscar Robertson, maybe even like Carmelo Anthony in a certain sense. I don't know if you agree with that comparison.
Like Carmelo Anthony, James Harden, if he never wins a title.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But
No, that's fair.
I don't know if he'll be a Maverick forever. I could see him and Jokic teaming up at some point. I mean, I think that like all the sort of inklings have
The
been
Balkan brothers,
yeah.
that'll be their nickname.
Yeah, I mean, what did you see from this game, and do you kind of agree with my predictions?
Yeah, I mean, I think top 15 if he wins a single ring. Honestly, I think you can. I think you can make the argument for him off of a single ring that he could be top 15. Like,
What
this is a
player in the
guy.
top 15 has one ring, though?
That's a good question.
I think you need multiple rings to even be considered for that.
That's true. That's true. But like, I think if he becomes like the number two or number one scorer of all time. Like, I think you have to put him there.
Sure, that'll change things.
Like I don't think he can catch LeBron because I just think the longevity is just ridiculous. I think the pace of the game today helps, but Luka also came into the league a little bit older. He came in with more miles on his legs, having played professional basketball since he was 12. I don't think he necessarily has as much of that bug as LeBron does to like have these all-time great statistics. Like nobody is going to play nearly as long as LeBron, like for the at this good, right? Like Luka maybe has a chance because his style of game is very slow and methodic and not very reliant on athleticism. But that's just where the NBA is trending. I think everyone's going to be like that. So I don't think we'll catch LeBron because I think LeBron still has a few seasons in him. But talking about just this game as a whole, I think what we really saw was a frustration of Kevin Durant just come up to full display. There were multiple possessions where he kind of just looked like he did not care. He was just going to chuck up a shot because it's his team. And I think you see Suns fans really starting to turn on him. It's reported now that he's very frustrated with the support he's been getting. I think this is just panning out very similarly to the Brooklyn situation that we saw. And I think this is, again, just making the case for Kevin Durant as a guy who can't win on his own and just wants to be where it's easy. He doesn't want to take the hard route. He never wants to play winning basketball the right way. And I think this really harms Kevin Durant's legacy even more than he already has been harmed by his charades in Brooklyn.
I think we're going to be having some really serious conversations about Kevin Durant if this thing in Phoenix doesn't work out, which it looks like it's not gonna. Because outside of his few years in Golden State, where arguably he wasn't even the one guy, right? You could make the argument he was number two behind Steph Curry. What has Kevin Durant done outside of that? He made the finals in 2012 with OKC. He almost, he was a foot away from making the conference finals in Brooklyn against Milwaukee. But other than that, he's not done anything, right? It's been disappointment after frustrated situation, after trade request, after, failed super team. It hasn't worked out. And a lot of that, we have to look at the common factor here, and it's Kevin Durant, right? I mean, you got to wonder, you think that the Phoenix Suns are making a trade for Bradley Beal without his permission, without his approval, maybe without even his request? Absolutely not. And I think that Kevin Durant needs to take an honest look in the mirror and realize that he is the problem in many different ways, similar to James
Never
Harden.
gonna happen.
But, I think Kevin Durant is kind of has an ego. I think he's a very, because he's so talented a basketball player, he can't realize when he's making mistakes that are actively hurting his chances of winning. And then he just, he'll only do the reflection and take a look around when he's losing, and he'll be like, "Wow, I can't believe the Suns did this." No, you did this. You came into this team. You demanded everything be changed to fit around you. And now, look where you're at, right?
It's
Now
really
you're
interesting to see
renaissance.
how, sorry, I was gonna say, I think it's really interesting to see how this sort of, I would call this the LeBron era of player empowerment, where superstars kind of just turn in the style of a team. It's just, I think, been really fascinating to see how like LeBron has like had success in doing that sort of thing versus how maybe like Kevin Durant or James Harden or Kyrie Irving has struggled to kind of do that same sort of team building by themselves. And that's like not like to blaze LeBron or anything like that. I'm just saying, I think Kevin Durant only feels like he can do this because there's a guy who did it before him.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I think LeBron did sort of set the trend there. But I mean, clearly LeBron's been doing it smarter and he's been a lot more, maybe even cutthroat. I don't even know. Like, I don't know
Oh no, he's got to build out, bro. He fucking wanted Westbrook. He fucking wanted Westbrook, and we all know it. He got
if.
bailed
That's
out
true.
by the
That's true.
fucking
You didn't want a
Timberwolves.
Westbrook. I don't blame you. That you can't make all the right moves as if you're the GM,
If you're the GM, yeah.
You have some stinkers in there, but we forgive him. I
But
think
is there anything else you want to talk about with this Suns-Mavs game?
I mean, but outside of like these magnificent performances from Chimezie Metu and Devin Booker, I can't say, or sorry,
Grayson Allen, you mean?
Grayson Allen, not Devin Booker. Can't say too much. I mean, like, It was just like a Luka masterclass. That's all I can really. Oh, I guess I want to mention Derek Lively. I think, he had 20 and 10 this
Yeah.
game. And I mean, he just showing he was absolutely the right pick for Dallas. I know people had doubts about him and, if his game would translate to the NBA. But like, I think we're seeing Luka is thriving off having a pick and roll big that's hyper athletic and a bit of a shot blocker on the other end. He's exactly the type of guy that fits in well with Luka, and I think we're seeing that reap dividends for the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Very much like a modern DeAndre Jordan. But I
Exactly.
wanted to move on to the last topic of the day, which is the Memphis Grizzlies. We have to talk about Ja Morant. He's returned from his 25-game suspension, and the Grizzlies have looked great. They're 3-0 since Ja Morant returned. He's averaging 28-9-6 on okay efficiency. I mean, his three ball has not been falling. It's at 20% right now. But, we're 3 games in. That's going to come back to the average. And Desmond Bane, who I thought was going to fall off a little bit, has honestly been playing better since the return of Ja, just because there's less attention on him. He's now averaging 29, 5.5, and 4 since Ja returned, and just being a really good co-star. So what have you seen out of this Grizzlies team since Ja has been back? And do you think we were accurate in assuming that this team is going to end up in a a play-in spot just because of their early struggles?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that what have I seen from this team? They're reanimated. This is a team that's back to life. If you watch the Memphis Grizzlies, which I don't know why you were during that 25-game stint without Ja, this was a walking corpse. I mean, there was no fight in this team. The team was just moving like it already lost the game and were playing for second place. And it was sad to see, honestly. Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane were clearly frustrated, and all the injuries meant that they were running guys in the rotation that clearly had no business being out there on the floor. But now that Ja's back, which, I mean, you can't write a better ending than Ja coming back his first game against Zion Williamson and the New Orleans
Yep.
Pelicans, dropping 30 plus, hitting the game winner in New Orleans. I mean, it's like a storybook ending right there. And they've just looked great ever since. As you said, his game has unlocked everyone else on the floor, namely Desmond Bane, who is thriving where he should be as a number two option. He can't be that number one guy. And I think we saw that not everyone is cut out to be the number one. And clearly, Desmond Bane is not that guy. And I think Jaws, he's playing his game. He's getting to his floaters. He's, diving to the rim, these hyper athletic finishes. And the Grizzlies are thriving as a result. I think they are going to make the play-in. If they end up making the playoffs, Hunter, do you think Ja is going to be in MVP talks? Because think about it. What does the title of MVP mean? Most valuable player. If he takes them from a bottom of the conference, out of any sort of play-in contention team, as I said, a corpse of a team, to a playoff team, does that make him the most valuable player?
I think by definition, the most valuable player should be going to the guy who provides the most value to his team. And in that case, he's going to make the argument. But the NBA simply does not see the most valuable player as the most valuable player. They see the most valuable player as the most impactful player on a top three team. That's really what they're worried.
Minus a few exceptions like Westbrook and
Right, but the
17.
historic seasons. Some players have historic seasons. And I don't think if Ja Morant were to bring this team back from the 14 seed, that it would be considered that kind of historic. I think it's just a different kind of historic. And it's also due to Ja Morant's own doing. So I think that would be a factor in it as well, even though it really shouldn't be. I don't think the league necessarily wants Ja Morant as the face coming back so soon from a sort of incident like that. But speaking of his incident, his dad, T. Morant, was talking about how Ja Morant has not changed his circle of his people. Like he hasn't changed anything. His friend group has supposedly been having a negative influence on him. Does that concern you at all?
I mean, it does. I think that, like you would have hoped to hear like, yeah, he's found a new circle and he's really been changing his ways and trying to be better, making more positive impacts in the community. But I mean, it seems like maybe he's like, all right, I just gotta wait out the suspension and I'll just be back to it. And so hopefully we don't see any repeat sort of incidents happen, but it's looking probable we might be trending in that direction because Ja hasn't made the necessary changes on his end to sort of prevent that from happening. But yeah, I mean, on the court, basketball wise, it's great to see Ja back, one of the most electric stars. And seeing that return game, I mean, wow, that was fun. You don't realize how much you miss this guy till like
Yeah, great
you see him
return.
back on the court. But
Yeah, I'm excited for Guns N' Roses to be back on the court together.
Guns N' Roses, great nickname, great nickname. But
Yes, best NBA nickname.
one last thing I wanted to mention, not on the dock, the Detroit Pistons could make history tonight, having the longest losing streak in NBA history. Yes, since our last podcast, they still have not won a basketball game, but they are playing right now against.
I don't know if it's NBA history yet.
You think?
Is it not 28 games? I think it's 28 games
It
is the
might be
streak.
28, but regardless, they're up 6-1 against the Brooklyn Nets. 6-100. Against the struggling Brooklyn Nets, who are
It's
not.
actually 9-1 now. No.
Do you think they're gonna pull it off? Can they pull off the miracle and stave off history, or will they
I
lose?
really hope they don't. I really hope they don't. Because if they lose tonight, the next game, they definitely lose because they're playing the Celtics.
We absolutely need this to happen. So, Brooklyn, Mikal Bridges, Nick Claxton, Cam Johnson, Spencer Dinwiddie, take my
Step
energy.
it up.
We need you guys to win. Honestly, give the ball to Cam Thomas. Get out the way. Let him go for 50. And let Monty Williams cook. That's all I'll say. Let Monty Williams cook. But in that, I think that's a good place to call it. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode and all our episodes this year. We hope to make Time Out Talk even bigger and even better in 2024. Which should be the best year of Time Out Talk yet. So, thank you all so much for
Yes.
sticking with us, and I hope you have a lovely new year with your family and loved ones. And we'll see you all then. So, take care. We'll see you. Bye bye.